Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 16th, 2019. Sudanese react to the sentencing of their ousted president.
Things may take some time to work correctly, but it's not bad as a first step. We need to be patient.
And President Kiir and Riek Machar meet once again in Juba, but what, if anything, was resolved?
Today the President and Dr. Riek are discussing the same issue on how far we have gone as a committee on the implementation process.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. There is mixed reaction today in Khartoum over Saturday's sentencing of Omar al-Bashir. The ousted president was sentenced to 2 years in a correctional facility after being found guilty of corruption and illegitimate possession of foreign currency. Some Sudanese say the verdict is a good step forward, while others criticize the sentencing, saying it violates the former president's rights. Sudanese Justice Asadiq Abdurrahman El-Feki announced Omar El-Bashir's sentencing of 2 years in a social reformatory following his two-and-a-half-month trial. The 75-year-old autocratic leader was sent back Saturday to the maximum security Khobar prison as he awaits the start of yet another trial. According to Sudanese law, anyone over the age of 70 cannot go to prison. Speaking in Arabic, Bashir defense lawyer Mohammed El-Hassan El-Amin told South Sudan in Focus that the sentence was politically motivated and says Bashir should have been given a fair trial by handing him over to one of his trusted relatives, according to Article 48 of the 2015 amended Sudanese Criminal Act.
This decision is wrong, and we believe it is politically motivated because we have provided all the case evidences that our president is innocent from the charges that are put against him.
Again, speaking in Arabic, Al-Amin says they will still appeal the verdict within the next few days and find justice for his client.
We'll be receiving in a day or two a copy of court decision. I'll be attaching the decision with an appeal document to the Court of Appeal. We trust the Sudanese judiciary that President al-Bashir is innocent from all charges that are put against him.
Babakir Faisal, a member of the Sudanese Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC, welcomed the move. He says since more charges are still underway against the former president, there's still a need for the Sudanese court to keep him safe prior to more court hearings. He says his age cannot be an excuse to let him go free after committing horrific atrocities against his own citizens.
He will be tried in more crimes, particularly the issues regarding the genocide in Darfur, the killing and the arbitrary killing. And also, as you know, he's now part of the ongoing trial of the coup organizers.
Sudanese citizen Isra Osman also welcomes the decision by the court. Osman says Sudanese people would like to see al-Bashir behind bars for life for killing his own countrymen and women.
Things may take some time to work correctly, but it's not bad as a first step. We need to be patient and to be aware of what's happening around regarding this. I do believe that this is not the end of the road, and I hope that justice will be done.
Sudanese law expert Abdul Gadir Warsama downplayed the decision of the court of a 2-year sentence in a social reformatory for Bashir, saying that light sentence has tarnished the image of the country and the former president should face serious punishment for his acts.
Being head of state is more responsibility on him to be extremely honest and very clean. He gave a very bad example to a dignified nation. This is a clear case of dishonesty and treason that deserves an extreme tough punishment.
Sudanese Attorney General Taj al-Sir al-Hibir petitioned a court in Khartoum late last month to investigate Bashir and several other National Congress Party members for overthrowing an elected government back in 1989. Bashir appeared in a metal cage inside a courtroom during his trial in Khartoum. He now faces the charge of plotting the 1989 coup that swept him into power. Michael Atit helped prepare that report from Khartoum. Another closed-door meeting between President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar adjourned today in Juba without a resolution to the peace deal's critical issues. The two will try again tomorrow, but are far from reaching a solution on what may be the most contentious issue, the number of states and their boundaries for South Sudan, as we hear from Dimo Silva Aurelio for VOA in Juba.
Today's closed-door meeting lasted only 30 minutes, and there was no clear outcome. It was the second time President Kiir and Machar met in the presidential palace as the 100-day deadline nears. Sudan's deputy head of Transitional Military Council, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, and Kiir's security advisor, Tut Keo, also attended the meeting. When Machar and Dagalo walked out of Kiir's office earlier today, both refused to provide statements or take questions from journalists. Without offering further explanation, Tut Keo, President Kiir's security advisor and NPTC chairman, told journalists the meeting focused on security arrangements.
Today the president and Dr. Riek are discussing the same issue on how far we have gone as a committee on the implementation process. They also discussed the budget and the expected money which we have already paid in support for the peace implementation.
The parties have yet to agree on the number of states and their boundaries. When asked how far apart they are on reaching a consensus on that issue, Keo had this to say.
On the states, we have a committee who are working on it, and they will submit the report to the leadership. But as of now, our focus is still on the security arrangement, because everything about this peace agreement depends on security arrangement, and the two are going very well with their meetings, and they are all agreeing and are going according to the plans, the security mechanism as planned.
It remains unclear when Machar will be leaving Juba. He has exceeded the 4 days he was expected to stay for talks in the South Sudanese capital. The number of states remains a key sticking point for the two leaders. The parties to the revitalized peace deal have less than 60 days to form the unity government. It remains unclear if Machar and Kiir will strike a deal on security arrangements and the number of states and their boundaries within that time. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudanese lawyers have nominated a new speaker to replace the former speaker, Anthony Lino Makana, who resigned last week following corruption allegations against him. Abach Ajwak Akua was unanimously endorsed by the lawmakers this morning, but at least one lawmaker warned that the new speaker has very many duties, one of which is to hold executives accountable in South Sudan. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Speaker Ujok's confirmation today followed the endorsement early last week of the ruling SPLM party. The lawmakers confirmed the nomination minutes after today's reading of Anthony Lino Makana's resignation letter in the House and a letter from President and SPLM Chairman Salva Kiir providing his blessing for Ujok as Speaker. Ujoku hails from the minority community of Pari in northeastern Torit State, vows to prioritize solving political and economic challenges affecting the lives of South Sudanese.
I promise to uphold the rule of law, human rights, transparency, and accountability in the Agos House to set up strong, sustainable foundation for the coming generation of legislators.
The new speaker also vowed to work to improve the benefits of civil servants across the country. He says the existing salaries of civil servants, organized forces, and even lawmakers are quite low when compared to salaries of the same workers in other African countries. Ujok says he will also work to strengthen South Sudan's economic development.
Parliament shall exert mass effort to supervise, keenly monitor and evaluation implementation of plan program to promote economic growth through important pillar of development like basic infrastructure, or road and bridges, communication, networks, human resources, development, and power to accelerate development.
Ujok is described by colleagues as a quiet politician but a man of action. According to a preliminary vote by the Equatorial Caucus of MPs held last week, Ujok was not their first choice to replace Makana. The Honorable Martin Okeruk won the majority of votes, followed by Betty Achan and then Ujok. MP Victor Omuho Ohide, who like Ujok, hails from the former Eastern Equatoria state, says SPLM lawmakers respected the president's choice for speaker.
But as a party, and to keep the unity of the party, we respect the choice of the president because he knows all of us, the members.
Darwai Mabor, an opposition lawmaker who authored a motion to impeach former Speaker Makana, says he welcomes the new speaker but has some words of advice for him.
Speaker, Right Honorable Speaker, should be very careful because the parliament has an agenda, plus his agenda, because we saw him, he has an agenda, specifically for SPLM and specifically for honorable members of parliament. And he's actually repeat himself on the issues of salary. And he has not talked about the best parliamentary practice.
Darwai says all MPs want a conducive environment to work in which they can carry out their duties without interference from anyone. He says that was not the case when Makana was speaker.
The best practices is for Right Honorable Speaker to actually allow the parliament to deal with ministers, because ministers are not accountable. All the ministers, according to the law, they need to be investigated. They need to be questioned. And if there is any minister who is not actually doing his or her duties, it must be subjected to law, including the governors.
Darwai says the weak role of parliament in past years allowed other officials, including governors, to operate in their own world. He says governors routinely dismissed state lawmakers and other government officials, and that practice needs to end. Makana was accused of corruption and abuse of power. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. A high-ranking South Sudanese official reacts to the new U.S. sanctions against certain South Sudanese individuals. Find out more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you share an inspirational quote and where you heard it from?
Heavy rains are a reminder of challenges in life. Never ask for a lighter rain. Just pray for better umbrella. I just came across it while I was reading something on social media.
This quote I just added from church. The father was like, "For those who seek, always find. And so fight endlessly for what you want for the future."
Friends are like buttons on the lift. They either bring you down or take you up. I heard it while I was in secondary school and it stuck since then.
وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Whoever fears Allah will have solution to whatever problems. It is from the Holy Quran.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
And you're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan's government is demanding proof of wrongdoing by five South Sudanese individuals that were sanctioned last week by the United States Treasury Department for allegedly kidnapping and finally executing two prominent critics of the Kiir administration. The Suba Memo has more for VOA from Juba.
The U.S. Treasury Department sanctioned five South Sudanese for their alleged role in the kidnapping and killing of Dong Samuel, a human rights lawyer, and Agrey Idri, a member of the SPLM-IO. Both men went missing in Nairobi in late January 2017. South Sudan's government spokesperson Michael Makwei says the U.S. allegations against the sanctioned individuals are unverified.
Well, these are things which are not substantiated. I cannot comment about it. Because after all, it is not a question of choosing any names, but do they have the evidence?
In May, the UN panel of experts on South Sudan said in a published report that it had collected enough evidence to conclude that Luak and Idri were kidnapped in Nairobi and executed in South Sudan shortly after their disappearance. The new U.S. sanctions freeze any assets the individuals have in areas under U.S. jurisdiction and prohibit U.S. nationals from conducting any transactions with the five men. Those sanctioned include Aboud Stephen Tiongkol, who the Treasury Department identified as the commander of the detention facilities where the men were held prior to their killings. Others named are Michael Kwajin, one of two people publicly identified by the Treasury as being present in Kenya and having a hand in the kidnapping of Dong and Agrey. John Toplam is also sanctioned and is reported to have called a member of Dong's family in order to provide information on Dong's whereabouts in return for a substantial cash payment. Angelo Kwot Garang and Malual Dal Maurel were also among the five sanctioned individuals and identified as having committed, quote, serious human rights abuses. Dal is identified as the commando forces who participated in the killing of both men. Army spokesman Major General Lulroy Kong confirmed the sanctioned individuals. Aboud Stephen Tiongkol works in South Sudan's Internal Security Bureau. The report also accused him of detaining and assaulting three international monitors in December of 2018. But Dry insists that Stephen and Dal are not members of the SSPDF.
No, that information is not correct. That general you are referring to is from National Security Internal Bureau. He's not from SSPDF. They are not from SSPDF.
Makwei is distancing his government from the accusations. He says South Sudan has yet to receive an answer from the Kenyan government as to who kidnapped Dong and Agrey and individuals who handed them over to the South Sudanese officials.
We have been very clear that if these people were kidnapped in Kenya, and if they were kidnapped in Kenya, then it is the Kenyan government to be asked as to on the whereabouts of these people. And if they say we have handed them over to the government of South Sudan, then they tell us to whom did they hand over these people.
Last week, J.R. Maley, Director of Investigations at the Sentry, a Washington, D.C.-based investigative group, said the people who facilitated the illegal deportation of the two South Sudanese activists from Kenya who were eventually murdered should also be investigated and held to account. Maley told VOA last week that the U.S. and other stakeholders should gather evidence and prosecute cases without fear of political interference. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
In the neighboring Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, a brutal opposition group has killed at least 43 people with machetes and guns, once again straining the international effort to control a deadly Ebola outbreak in the troubled area. A series of attacks in the Beni region apparently are in response to a military offensive that began in late October against the Allied Democratic Forces and are aimed at convincing local residents not to cooperate with the DRC military. Insecurity in the area has prompted demonstrators to protest late last month by setting fire to the town hall. The unrest also has forced aid workers to stay indoors, allowing Ebola to rebound. It already has killed more than 2,200 people. More than 2,000 government officials, United Nations officials, and business leaders, as well as representatives from civil society organizations and humanitarian agencies, are gathering to attend the first ever Global Refugee Forum this week. The three-day event, which opened in Geneva today, aims to generate new approaches and long-term commitments to help refugees and the communities that host them. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva for VOA.
Organizers of the forum will be rolling out the red carpet for heads of state from Germany, Turkey, Pakistan, Costa Rica, Ethiopia, Somalia, as well as other prominent individuals who will be arriving for this seminal event. Much is at stake. More than 70 million people worldwide are forcibly displaced by war, conflict, and persecution. Among them are over 25 million refugees who have fled across international borders and are unable to return to their homes. The UNHCR says it hopes this gathering will prove to be a game changer in the way refugees and the countries and communities that host them are treated and supported. UNHCR spokesman Babar Balosh tells VOA the world's piecemeal approach in dealing with displacement and refugee affairs has to change.
This is bringing everyone together at the same place, on the same table, but also trying to work out a way forward in terms of how we deal with displacement issues. It is a clear call of responsibility sharing.
Balosh says everyone at all levels of government, development, financial, civil, and other sectors of society has to take responsibility and play a role in caring for the well-being of refugees.
It is about changing policies towards refugees. It is about responsibility sharing with the world's largest refugee hosting nations, like pledging more places for resettlement. But it is also changing policies, including refugees in education, in health services, and other sectors where they can benefit like other people.
The private sector also has an increasingly important role to play in responding to the growing needs of refugees. The UNHCR reports more than 100 companies and foundations, including big global corporations such as IKEA and Lego, are attending the forum. It says these enterprises are set to make pledges around jobs, finance, and other assistance. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Separatist fighters in western Cameroon have abducted at least 40 candidates for parliament and local councils in an effort to derail the February elections. The government is promising to free the hostages and protect political candidates and elections officials, saying the polls must be successful. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has this report for VOA from Yaoundé.
That is the voice of Samuel Fobba, a candidate for the February 9, 2020 local council election in Cameroon. In audio shared by separatist fighters, Fobba says he is being punished by separatists for defying their warning that no one should vote or be a candidate in the joint local council and parliamentary elections. Among those listening is 51-year-old teacher Wilson Batte. He says the separatists should free innocent Cameroonians who simply want to carry out their civic duties.
It's embarrassing. I feel very bad that politicians should be kidnapped for simply wanting to perform their fundamental rights. Government should do all what they can to make sure that there is a safe ground for all the political events, make sure that they provide the necessary security for these upcoming elections.
Separatists have been fighting since 2017 to detach English-speaking North West and South West Cameroon from the rest of the country and its French-speaking majority. Cameroon's government declared the regions were peaceful enough to hold the elections, but last week, nearly 40 people running for council seats were abducted in the northwest town of Jakiri. Another three were kidnapped in the northwest town of Bamenda for being in possession of voter cards. Prince Nguesse Ekoso, chairman of the opposition United Socialist Democratic Party, says conditions are not peaceful enough to hold the ballot.
It's a great risk in the Northwest and the Southwest to campaign. The country is going through one of the worst crises, which has actually taken tolls of lives, and the separatists have made their point. The tension is going to continue.
Paul Atanganje, Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration, says the government is making efforts to free the hostages and maintains the elections must take place as planned.
In the Northwest and Southwest, the head of state has given firm instructions to the Minister of Territorial Administration, to the Minister in charge of Defense, that we have to do everything that it takes for these elections to hold properly. It's just but normal that will uplift the security network in those two regions before, during, and after the process.
The abductions came at a time when Cameroon's parliament is meeting to debate the so-called special status President Paul Biya ordered as a solution to the separatist crisis. Some lawmakers say only the creation of federal states, one in the English-speaking regions and the other in the French-speaking areas, can stop the separatist war that has killed more than 3,000 people. The separatists have rejected the proposed special status, saying they want nothing but an independent state. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
And that is our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song One Love by Atupun.
All I need is your love, oh baby. So baby, don't dodge, just give me that, oh baby. All I ever need is your heart, oh. So give me that, oh girl, let me back. Cause that is all I need. Obi Dawa, Doni B. Obi Pewa, Doni B. Doni B. Obi Dawa, Doni B. Doni B. Obi Pewa, Doni B. Doni B. Girl, I dey love you not because of your bumper. Girl, I dey love you not because of your tonga. Girl, I dey like you for who you are, not for your shape looking like guitar, not for the sake of your shape guitar. Oh, hey. Girl, play 'em, girl, play 'em. Tinini, tono, no, tinini. Give me melody, give me melody. Your melody of trouble, baby. Charlie, love will no be naira or dollar. Oga, it no dey matter whether you be short or tall. Obi Dawa, don't leave me. Obi Pewa, Penny, Penny B. Obi Dawa, Doni B. Obi Pewa, Penny, Penny B. All we need is one love, oh baby. For the world to be a better place, oh baby. All we need is one heart. You know, if you say you dey love God, oh. They love your brother, so me tell you this. If you love him, make you show it, show it. If you ever try to stop it, control it, control it. Baby girl, make you roll it, roll it. It's a beautiful thing, so hold it, hold it. Somebody need ya, somebody want ya, somebody somewhere really care about ya. Baby, what you say? I true me telling you no. Boo, 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 boo. Obi Dawa, Doni B. Love is all we need. Obi Pewa, Penny B. Penny B. One love is all we need. Obi Pewa, Penny B.
We've been listening to Atumpan with the song One Love. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
There is nothing love and love we conquer, baby. So baby, make we stay together. Make we stay together. Oh,
Don't leave me. Love is all we need.